From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Gross.
We're down to one working day left in the state legislature, and this past week was all about the budget and multiple attempts to override the governor on his vetoes of state spending. Plus, the state legislature passes a major anti-human trafficking bill. Congressman Don Bacon commemorates Law Enforcement Week in D.C., and another major pro-life victory from the White House. And here in Nebraska, Planned Parenthood rolls out their pro-choice license plate. This is Capitol Connection. The state legislature is down to just one working day left. They are set to adjourn for the year on this Tuesday, culminating what has been an unprecedented, fascinating, at times rocky session. But a lot of good things also got done. But this past week, it was all about the budget. And boy, did the knives come out for this one. The state budget bill is pretty much the most important bill that the state legislature debates all year. It's the only one they're constitutionally required to pass. And so it starts out coming from the governor as his recommendations. Then it goes to the Appropriations Committee. They make all their adjustments, send it to the legislature, and they vote on it. And so they passed the budget bills, and then they go back to the governor, where he then has the opportunity to just sign them, or he has the opportunity to, again, make changes, and he can veto out specific lines and spending in the state budget bill. And that's what Governor Ricketts chose to do. Forecasting continues to show that state revenue is falling and not meeting projections. And so Governor Ricketts vetoed $56.5 million from the state budget bill, which calls for about $9 billion of spending for the next 2 years. So Governor Ricketts vetoes $56.5 million. And his message was really about protecting the budget and protecting the taxpayer, because we have a huge, massive budget shortfall. Governor Ricketts is doing the right thing, not calling or being willing to accept any new tax increases. So that means everyone's got to tighten their belts, just like any family or individual does when their income goes down. We would expect that our state government would do the same thing. Everyone's got to tighten their belts. But since this was technically a governor's veto of this spending, that means it went back to the legislature, where they had the opportunity to vote to either uphold his vetoes or override them and put that spending back in the budget bill. And the governor strongly encouraged the legislature to uphold those vetoes. And this was his message at the beginning of the week.
The state's revenue picture continues to worsen, and we must take responsible steps to tighten our belts. The budget I received back from the legislature increases the gas tax and relies on budget gimmicks. To prevent a tax increase and to protect the budget, I have vetoed a total of $56.5 million. These are thoughtful and measured reductions, and I urge the legislature to sustain these vetoes.
So that was the governor at the beginning of the week urging the legislature to sustain his vetoes, and then the Appropriations Committee got together and they recommended that the legislature override $32.7 million of that $56.5 that was cut out by the governor. So basically, this broke down to four separate motions to reinstate different amounts of money that totaled that $32.7 million that they were trying to get back into the budget. And it ended up being a clean sweep for the governor. All vetoes were sustained. You need 30 votes in the legislature to override a veto, and the closest that they ever got to overriding one of the governor's vetoes was 27. And that was arguably the most important one, because that dealt with $32.4 million that they were trying to reinstate in funding for Medicaid providers. But that attempt was unsuccessful, as was every attempt to override the governor's vetoes on the budget. And supporters of making the override and putting that money back in the budget basically did almost all of the talking during those debates. And it was heated. It was contentious. Basically, if You supported the governor and his vetoes and were willing to cut this funding. You were a terrible person who doesn't care about the poor or the needy or the disabled, and you're going to be responsible for everything terrible that happens in the next 2 years because we cut more from the state budget, even though the money just simply is not there, and we're facing what is now over $1 billion budget shortfall. But it was those who remained steady and stood by their votes to uphold those vetoes who won the day. And what was really interesting about all this, not surprising, but important to remember, when you look at the votes on these four motions to override the governor, you'll notice that one party voted as a block, every senator, every time, and it wasn't the Republicans. We hear all the time the importance of bipartisanship and how we can't let party politics dominate our legislature, and we need to uphold the traditions of our nonpartisan unicameral. We hear it constantly. We've heard it this year spouted by Democrats all throughout the session whenever it worked in their favor. And then when it comes to the end of the year and the important bills dealing with spending, the Democrats vote as a block. Everyone voted the exact same way on each of those four motions to override the governor. Republicans didn't. Various senators who are Republicans voted different ways. They voted to uphold certain vetoes, and they voted to reinstate the funding and override the vetoes on others. And I just point that out because we hear it all the time about the need to work across the aisle and not to vote as a party block. But when you really look at the votes, there's only one party who does that consistently, voting as a block, and it is not the Republicans. If it were, we would get a lot better results from the legislature, but it doesn't happen. What did happen last week, though, that I'm really excited about, on an issue that does cross party lines and all political differences, as it should, is the issue of human trafficking. And the state legislature passed on final reading last week LB 289, which is a major anti-human trafficking law that significantly, and I would add appropriately, increases penalties related to human trafficking for both the trafficker and the buyer. This was a major step for the state of Nebraska towards ending human trafficking. We have seen really tremendous strides just over the last couple of years to address and combat human trafficking and raise awareness. But the truth is, until this past week, the penalties in Nebraska simply did not fit the crime. But now, thanks to state senators passing this law, we are going to implement the toughest and harshest penalties possible for these crimes, and puts Nebraska's laws much more in line with Nebraskans' commitment to ending human trafficking. The Attorney General supported that bill and helped work on it. They have been doing really tremendous work and are very dedicated towards fighting human trafficking in Nebraska, and the Nebraska Family Alliance also played a role in helping pass that bill. So despite all that went on earlier in the week with the budget and everything that's happened all session, this was a really nice moment. It wasn't just a moment, because it's much more than just a feel-good bill or something to bring people together on a difficult issue. This was a serious, serious bill that does much more than just send a message, and it does send a strong message that very simply, we are not going to tolerate this type of illegal activity in Nebraska, but more importantly, it backs up that message with concrete action, which is obviously a big deal, but particularly in the legislature, oftentimes on important issues or big ideas, sometimes you'll just get a resolution or a ceremony, which do have their place, but in this instance, it wasn't just a simple resolution to highlight the problem. It was a serious bill to go after and get in front of the problem. So great work being done in Nebraska to combat human trafficking. Still much work, of course, to be done, but we continue to take the necessary steps. Today's program is sponsored by Walker Tire and Auto Service, Walker Tire and Auto has been serving Omaha customers for over 6 decades. Whatever your vehicle needs, Walker Tire and Omaha is here to help at any one of their 4 convenient locations. Visit Walker Tire and Auto at 144th and Harrison, 84th and Dodge, 89th and L, and 140th and Center, where you can get the free video vehicle health inspections free with every visit. Hear from expert technicians and see for yourself how your vehicle is doing right from your email or phone. You can also take advantage of the Walker Tire Advantage, where you get free oil changes and more for the life of your tires. Walker Tire and Auto, going the extra mile for you. Last week was National Police Week, an important time to celebrate and honor the Thin Blue Line, the brave men and women who serve as police officers and defend and protect our communities. The White House was lit up in blue at night to honor the police officers, which is actually something that the previous administration refused to do. They would not do it, although they were sure to illuminate the White House in the rainbow to celebrate the same-sex marriage decision, but they refused to light up the White House in blue. But that is something that changed this year under the Trump administration. And also our own Congressman Don Bacon celebrated and recognized Law Enforcement Week with a powerful and impassioned speech that he gave on the House floor to honor our police officers. Take a listen to some of his remarks. This is Congressman Don Bacon commemorating Law Enforcement Week with a speech on the House floor.
I stand in support of those who put their lives on the line, day in and day out, for the protection of those within the state of Nebraska and all over the United States. My district is home to 2 sheriff offices, a large urban police force, numerous community police departments, the Nebraska State Patrol, and a handful of federal agencies. They have unique differences in their responsibilities, yet they are strikingly similar in how they function. The different shapes of the badges they wear on their chests proudly proclaims their distinct alliance to their home agency, but it is also a symbol that binds them all together into one brotherhood. These gallant law enforcement professionals are driven to serve the public of their jurisdictions. They protect the life, limb, and property in their assigned patrol areas during their long hours for which they have this solemn duty. To those on the front line of our safety, it is not about the pay, the hours, or the conditions they work in. What is of importance to them is the satisfaction of making the world better and a safer place. They are the thin blue line that stands between us and some of the darkest parts of our society. When one of these brave individuals put on the uniform and departs their home for the streets, they're not worried about their own safety. They know their fellow officer has their back when needed. At great personal sacrifice, they are pained by the missing of the baseball games or the recitals of beloved children, the birthdays, the holidays that they've worked instead of being home with their families. I, like so many other members of the military, have a very personal connection and appreciation for those who serve this profession. I spent nearly 30 years in the military, and much of that time was deployed with combat forces protecting our freedoms overseas. The men and women in the military uniform depend on those back home in the blue uniform. Like so many others in the military, when I was overseas, I left my wife and children in the U.S., and as a 5-time former commander, I can tell you that the fastest way to negatively affect a soldier, a sailor, airman, or marine within a combat situation was to have them worry about their families back home. Our great police officers allow the military to be a success. I'm in awe with the dedication that each officer displays daily. When our military is reunited with their family after a deployment, they can relax knowing their fellow public servants provide a shield of protection. This is a profession that takes a different type of individual, someone who is consistently putting their lives on the line, someone that I have always looked up to a group of individuals that I cannot thank enough for the blanket of security they provide. Now, there are a number of law enforcement community who serve, retire, and move on with their lives. Eventually, they go home, lay down their badge in retirement, but they will no longer miss those family functions and events. These professionals have the gratitude of the constituents of my district, and I want to thank them for their dedication to protect and serve. I would like to honor some of these courageous people who have long distinguished careers who recently retired. They are Sergeant Joe Eaton from the Sarpy County Sheriff's Office, 38 years and retired. Sergeant Troy Kister, Omaha Police Department, 29 years and retired. Captain Kevin Picorni, La Vista Police Department, 32 years and retired. Deputy Stephanie Squires, Sarpy County Sheriff's Office, 32 years and retired. Sergeant Don Voss, Sarpy County Sheriff's Office, 39 years and will soon retire. And Deputy Dennis Yeaman, Douglas County Sheriff's Office, 42 years and retired, and still serving, nearing retirement. I want to thank these officers and all others for their service and sacrifice. And before I yield, Mr. Speaker, I just want to say I'm often asked, as a 30-year retired military officer, to pay tribute to our law enforcement and to compare. And what strikes me is I used to operate or train in the safety of home, but we would deploy into harm's way. Our law enforcement every single day put themselves in harm's way. So we love our law enforcement, we respect them, and we thank them.
Excellent remarks from Congressman Don Bacon last week on the House floor honoring our law enforcement. And we do thank all of our police officers, all the brave men and women serving on the thin blue line. Thank you for your service and the work that you do, sacrificing, putting your own life on the line to keep our families and our communities safe. We got some more good news out of the White House last week, which may be hard to believe with everything that's going on right now, and especially with the mainstream media reporting. I don't know if they believe it's possible for good news to come out of the White House. And so this story was buried and largely ignored. But I want to talk about it because it's extremely important, the most important issue, the issue of life. And we got another major pro-life victory from the Trump administration when they announced the implementation of a new Protecting Life and Global Health Assistance policy. This is essentially a reiteration and, more importantly, an expansion of the Mexico City policy. And the Mexico City policy is a pro-life policy initiated by President Ronald Reagan, designed to ensure that U.S. taxpayer money is not being sent to non-government organizations overseas in other countries that perform or promote abortion. So just making sure that U.S. tax dollars aren't going to abortions overseas. And it's been a back and forth with new presidents as they come in. President Bush, he embraced it and expanded it. And then Presidents Bill Clinton and Obama nullified it. And so Trump reinstated it upon taking office. That was one of his first actions as president, actually. But now he's taking it a step further. He has taken a traditional pro-life victory a step further by expanding it with this new global health initiative. So the original Mexico City policy that President Trump reinstated, that originally only applied to family planning funds, which is still over $500 million. This new policy, however, that they are implementing has pro-life safeguards on almost $8.8 billion in annual global health assistance funding. And this includes not just family planning, but other multiple global health assistance programs, such as maternal and child health, malaria, and HIV. And of course, it's also important to point out that this new guidance and expansion of the Mexico City policy does not reduce funding for global health assistance in any way, not even by one penny. So we're giving the same amount to global assistance, but we're adding more pro-life safeguards, ensuring that this money, taxpayer money, is not being used for abortions or to promote abortions in other countries. So that is the new Protecting Life and Global Health Assistance policy from the Trump administration to prevent your tax dollars from funneling to abortions overseas. And I don't know if I can think of a truly worse use of taxpayer dollars. I mean, if you think about that, the government taking your money, your very hard-earned dollars, sending it overseas to another country to terminate a pregnancy, to destroy the life of an unborn child using our tax dollars. And why can't everyone agree on that, that's a bad thing? Whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, sending United States tax dollars, American citizens' hard-earned money, to other countries for abortions. We really couldn't find better use of that money than to intentionally take the life of precious and defenseless unborn children. I don't think so, and I'm glad that President Trump has instated this new expansion of the pro-life Mexico City policy. And absolutely, of course, we should help people. That should be part of our foreign policy, to help support those in great need and provide increased access to quality maternal care and prenatal care and women's health care, and ensure better nutrition and quality of life for people. But that does not need to include abortion. So good for President Trump for continuing to support and protect the weakest and most vulnerable among us. Interesting news here in Nebraska. Planned Parenthood, they, on the other hand, just unveiled their new specialty license plate that says "My Body, My Choice," and it's got the nice Planned Parenthood logo at the bottom, which is just so ironic on so many fronts. First of all, this whole specialty license plate debate that has been raging because the legislature passed a pro-life license plate that says "Choose Life." So we just heard constant hectoring and complaining from the Planned Parenthood and pro-choice activists that this was political speech and it's inappropriate and unacceptable and we shouldn't be doing this. They were so concerned about that message, "Choose Life," being on a specialty license plate that people would just have the option to voluntarily purchase. Very concerned, no political speech on a license plate. And then here they go putting "My Body, My Choice," and then their logo, actually, Planned Parenthood, on the license plate. How's that for political speech? Have your cake and eat it too. It's funny, we were just talking about the Mexico City policy, which is a pro-life policy implemented by President Reagan, and he's got a great quote. President Reagan said, "I've noticed that everyone who is for abortion has already been born." And that whole "My Body, My Choice" slogan is just completely scientifically false. It's inaccurate. It's not true. There are, in fact, two bodies. They are right on one hand. My body, yes, it is a woman's body, but there is another body, the baby. And that baby, according to science, has its own DNA. It's a separate human being. We know that for a fact. The unborn child is a separate, distinct, whole human being with its own DNA, separate from the mother. And that life is worthy of love and protection. And that's what we really need, more compassionate care for mothers and their babies, not more Planned Parenthoods and their pro-choice, logically flawed license plates, which is why I would encourage everyone to buy the pro-life license plates that will be available in January, the Choose Life license plates, which are neat because not only is it a positive message about life, but it actually sends the proceeds from purchasing that specialty license plate go towards the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Fund. So it's actually raising money to help families and children who are in need. So you can put your money where your mouth is, support life, promote a positive pro-life message that all people should get on board with, choosing life. That's not offensive. And also at the same time, supporting families in need. It's a great cause and a wonderful opportunity. I think 30 states around the country have these license plates, and Nebraska will join them beginning next year. And that was actually the first pro-life bill that Nebraska has passed in 5 years. So some great pro-life momentum happening here in our state and also from our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. I'll be back next week to talk about the conclusion of this year's legislative session, everything that happened, what's going on, and what's coming back next year. Thank you again to sponsor of the show, Walker Tire and Auto Service. Whatever your vehicle needs, visit Walker Tire in Omaha at one of their 4 convenient locations. Walker Tire and Auto has been serving Omaha customers for over 6 decades. And offers the Walker Tire Advantage, where you get free oil changes and more for the life of your tires. And as always, for all things family, freedom, and life in state legislature, You can visit the Nebraska Family Alliance at nebraskafamilyalliance.org. Like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter. I'll be back next week with more updates from the Capitol. Thanks for listening to your Capitol Connection.